and that's the way it is.
Chicago.
Sorry, we didn't make up the rules.
No, they finally were in our favor. So.
What does this mean for the future? This is not good. I don't know. I don't think it's a good sign that blind draws are deciding where players go. I'm sorry. It's such a broken system. It's so flawed.
Yeah, I saw people comparing it to weighted lotteries and other things in sports. It's just not, because this falls in that gray area of, like, it'll be deemed by the commissioner or whatever, however the rules are written. There's nothing in there about a blind draw, and that's what's scary. The precedent it sets is scary.
But Jermaine Jones is a ref, for any of us who care in this area.
But just imagine if he wasn't, how pissed off people would be right now.
What, if it was on the other side of things and the blind draw went to Chicago?
Yeah, if that blind draw goes to Chicago, people will be rip poop mad.
Look at you. I cleaned it up.
I know. They'd be so, so mad. I'm mad at the way it went down, and it turned it out positive for my team. Like, But
you can't blame the refs. That's another thing that nobody can do. Nobody can blame the organization.
It has absolutely nothing to do with the refs. And kudos to Bob Kraft. Kudos to John Kraft. Kudos to Brian Bolello. Kudos to Mike Burns. Kudos to Jay Heaps.
You can shove that article where the sun don't shine. I swear, they're just... It's so funny watching all the, you know... Because it oozes out all the people that just go from, oh, this team sucks. This team will never be contenders in this area. They have no touch with the sport. They have no touch with their fans.
In a 48-hour span, Bob Kraft or Jonathan Kraft, whoever really is pulling the strings,
right,
has completely pulled the 180 on most of the fan base's belief of how they run things, which, good or bad.
And they were at the press conference. Give them credit for being at the press conference.
They were.
They front and center.
Yep.
And they didn't make it about them either, which I liked. Because if you were John Kraft that day, for all the criticism and all the knocks that you've taken through this process of...
Warranted criticism,
fine, in certain areas. Keep in mind, this is a very tedious business family. And he could have gone up there the day Jermaine Jones gets announced and made it all about him. And made it all about the organization finally going out there and making a debt. The Crafts let it play out. The refs did their thing. Brian, Jay, Mike, Jermaine... It looked good. It looked like, you know, the Revs stood alone as an organization, and it wasn't the overshadowing of another organization within the... Now, granted, Logan Mankins gets traded the same day Jermaine Jones gets announced to the press, but hey, we can't get greedy in this area, right?
Yeah, whatever. I don't care about the Patriots. Not my problem.
It's just like the attention gets taken away a little bit from the Revs. But,
yeah, I mean, I didn't...
But again, all credit needs to go to John and Bob Kraft for everything that they've done throughout these last... this month and a half, really, because you think about how quiet the Revs have been here.
Yeah, it...
Polar opposites of them in Chicago.
It was painstaking to watch this team make no moves. There's so many,
oh my God, it was so awful.
So many times I was on this pod, and I'm like, I want to talk about how badly this team is failing everyone right now. And they pulled this. And then the next
day, rabbit out of the hat.
The next day they pick up Joffrey Castiglione, or I don't know who that is, but he's 6'3" and a striker. I like that much.
He plays in Ajax. He's Dutch.
Yeah, he played it.
Oh. Played in Ajax. Well, if you want to call it played.
He went through the Ajax system. He played one game for the senior squad and then got loaned out for 4 years.
Yeah.
Still pretty impressive. Ajax is a pretty good...
Well, it's one of the top teams in Europe. And, I mean, that's continuously always contending for Champions League.
And their youth squad is one of the best in the world. So,
welcome to New England, Jeffrey.
Yeah. Joffrey.
Is that how you say it? Joffrey?
Joffrey, yeah.
See, I've been calling him Jeffrey.
Joffrey.
Joffrey.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Joffrey.
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 Yeah.
We need some, like, we're going to need to get some pronunciation guys in here now. Just translators, because you want to make sure with all the new international guys coming in here, we're going to make sure that we're keeping up with everybody.
Well, it's on the press release. I mean,
forget about it. I mean, come on, Jermaine Jones, Joffrey. Well, who's next?
If you don't know how to pronounce Jermaine Jones.
If you don't know how to pronounce Jermaine Jones. But I will say this.
A little problem with the English language.
Jermaine speaks a little bit of broken English. You know, I think he
was born and raised in Germany.
Right. But where are we going with that?
I don't know.
Okay, we'll edit this part out. overall, press conference, good day. You felt overall happy about it?
Oh yeah, I mean that press conference was great. I didn't get to see it. I watched it on the radio with you.
You watched it on the radio?
Watched it on the radio.
I
watched the radio while it was talking. So I watched it on the radio. That makes perfect sense. I mean it sounded great. I mean I called in to the show after and I said right then, Jermaine Jones alleviated every fear I had. The fitness, the drive.
Well, the fitness is still yet to be seen. The drive, though, I agree with.
The fact that Jermaine Jones said he wants to play Saturday, even if he's not fit, he said, I'll lie to you. Like, that is just huge to me. The fact that he wants to play right now, he wants to play to win, and the Revs have 10 games left, and they're all in the Eastern Conference, which is huge. Like, I don't think people understand how huge that is.
I think when he said, I just real quick on the I'll lie to you thing, I think what he meant by that is that I'm lying if I'm saying I'm 100%. I think that's what he meant by that. But he also said, too, he made a big point out of this. He wants Jay to push him for him to be ready for Toronto. And he wants Jay to push him to be ready for the last 10 games of this season, which all conference games. And essentially, the Revs control their own destiny here. And Jermaine is aware of the situation going on here in New England now that this team can still not only just finish in the playoffs, but it's a top three finish that they're aiming for now. It's not just get in. It's get in and get in with comfort.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think top three is a little...
It's a little bit more reasonable.
Well, it's still a grasp. I mean...
Toronto, Columbus, and New York. You're going to tell me that Toronto... For everything that, because Toronto and New York have the most goals against of any of the top five teams in the Eastern and Western Conference. Yeah. Defensively, they've been shaky. So I can, and granted, they have great offensive scoring prowess. Bradley Wright Phillips, you know, Dax McCarty, Thierry Henry for New York. We don't need to say anything else more. For Toronto, Defoe, Gilberto, Bradley. But the problem for Toronto is that they don't have enough padding defensively, especially since they've lost Julio Cesar, who got called back to QPR and transferred out to Benfica. And then when New York gets healthy with Jonathan Alavi, now that's a different story. Because Louis Robles, I think, is one of the best goaltenders in this league.
Absolutely.
But right now, New York is shaky, so you have to pounce on these teams. Again, too, once you get into the playoffs, it's a completely different season.
Yeah. I think for me... Right now, to say that you expect the Revs to finish with top three is unrealistic because the number one and two are already locked up.
Sure.
It's going to be some form of DC who got their ass handed to him last night by LA or Sporting Kansas City who got their ass handed to him by DC last week. But one of those two are going to be finishing in the top two spots in the Eastern Conference. I still think that... New York finishes above the Revs, and then the Revs finish fourth, which is better than last year.
Well, you finished in third last year. Granted, it was on the last day of the year, but...
Yeah, that's crap.
But first off, you know, the way people will talk about the way the Revs got in at third place and say, yeah, it's not really, you know, the most...
it was crap.
But they still get in. It doesn't matter how you get in.
Exactly.
If you get in, right? Sure.
Okay. Exactly.
But here we go. Here's why I say they finished third. The schedule that they have here should allow them they play some favorable games. Chicago is not a tough – I don't see Chicago at – back here at Gillette, that's a different game now. They lost 1-0 to Chicago, and they probably could have tied that game 1-1 if not for a save by Sean Johnson on a penalty.
Yeah,
and then you got Kansas City here too, and you just said that Kansas City just got romped on, right? So, Kansas City's limping a little bit.
I'm still not going to look past Kansas City.
I'm not saying look past Kansas City, but you've beaten Kansas City this year already. You can't tell me that you can't beat them again. You beat them already without Jermaine Jones. Like, Jermaine Jones being in this lineup now adds so much more.
But you have to factor in with the sporting game that you're going to be playing on Saturday, then you have a quick turnaround to Wednesday. The Reds aren't good in that situation.
You mean Wednesday to Sunday? Saturday, excuse me, they have a quick turnaround from Saturday to Wednesday, and then they have to play from Wednesday to Sunday.
Yeah, right. But they're playing Sporting Kansas City at home on Wednesday.
Yeah, but they're home against Chicago, and then they're home again against Montreal, too. So they're home for the next three.
But my concern is that you're going to be playing a game in Toronto on Saturday. On Wednesday, you're going to come back and you're going to have, you know, the best team in the Eastern Conference, regardless of standings, coming to your house. That's not a gimme. I think they get a point from that, if best. I'm not going to say they're absolutely win that game, with or without Jermaine Jones.
No, I'm not saying they're absolutely winning that game either, but I'm saying that they're going to compete. I'm going to say that – I'm absolutely going to say that if they didn't have Jermaine Jones – this would have been a guaranteed win for Sporting Kansas City. With Jermaine Jones in the lineup now, if anything, New England's got the advantage for just because, especially playing here in Foxborough, it's not an easy place for opposing teams to play just for how big the entire scene is. Sporting Kansas City lost here 2-0 earlier in the year. That happened. And New England was only really up 1-0 for a short amount of time in that game. I mean, Teal Bunbury's header, which grazes his head, amazingly enough. That gets the 2-0 win for the Rebs earlier in the year, and you escape with 3 points. Now, you can, opposed to not having Jermaine Jones, you could feel more comfortable in taking 3 points and walking away with a comfortable 2-0 win where you're not winning at the end. That's all my point. I think, listen, Jermaine Jones adds so much more now if he's 100%.
He does, and that's not the
argument.
But
that's the big if he's 100%. If. Because that's something I'm underplaying, too, is that if this is all ifs, and if it doesn't come true, then...
It's radio. All we can do is speculate.
That's all we're doing.
It's all speculation.
But these next four games, you don't think that they can take 12 points?
No, I don't.
Not at all?
No.
Why not?
I don't think they get 12 points now. Because I can't positively say that they're going to win against Sporting Kansas City. I mean, that's my problem. And I don't look past Chicago.
But this team hasn't really been that bad. Like, have they lost 9 out of 10?
They've absolutely been for long stretches. This team has absolutely been bad.
The two stretches that this team has been bad, two games that I would say back-to-back where you were like, oh, this is getting miserable, was L.A. and Dallas. Those were the two worst games, I would say, this year for the Revs in the middle of this whole stretch. Obviously, the first game of the year against Houston was...
And the second game against Philly, they didn't look good either.
But those two games and then L.A. and Dallas, I would say, would be the four games that New England got outplayed. And maybe one more time against Philly back here. That's the only... Those are five games this year I would say New England got outplayed. They lost 2-1 against Real Salt Lake, and that game was a toss-up. You had a bunch of red cards in that game. That game was
really
sloppy. They look good in that game. Now you lost 1-0 to Chicago, which I said, again, should have been a tie. You lost 2-1 to Columbus here, which was the most maddening finish I've seen in a while at Gillette, when you lost to Columbus here with Finley running down the middle and doing, I mean, the Darius Barnes stupid foul, that was just lackluster stupid mistakes. You didn't get out. Okay, maybe Montreal. So six games this year that you got outplayed in.
By teams that are all worse than Sporting Kansas. I mean, that's my biggest guy. I can't
LA
say.
And Dallas are worse than Sporting Kansas City, you think?
Well, not LA and Dallas, but I mean, Montreal is, Columbus absolutely is, and...
But the point is that they've lost those games where they might have gotten dominated, but the scoreline at the end was like...
There's no way in hell I can say they're gonna get 12 points when you have Sporting Kansas City in that mix. I can't. I cannot consciously, in good faith, say that they're going to win that game.
Okay, at least take a point.
I think they can take a point. And they could win. I'm not saying they're definitely going to lose. I'm just saying Sporting Kansas City is that good.
This is just a different team now, man. The expectations have gone skyrocketed. I'm sorry.
And I understand that, but you still have to keep them rational. I mean, to say that they're absolutely going to beat.
But this is a streaky team. This has been a streaky season. It's been a streaky team.
This team still hasn't proved anything that they're on an uptick right now. I mean, they beat who? They beat Chivas USA last week.
And they should have beaten Portland.
But they didn't because of crappy defense. Defense just fell asleep.
But now you have that padding that you didn't have before.
That is also true. But we also, right now, Jermaine Jones is an X factor. I cannot say that they can beat Sporting Kansas City.
Thank you, Jermaine Jones. Thank you for letting us do this. Are playoffs real? Are playoffs a realistic?
Playoffs are absolutely real. I said that. I think they finished fourth.
Okay.
And right now, it's a logjam for the Eastern Conference. It went from everyone in the Eastern Conference having a chance to Jermaine Jones coming in, and now you literally have three teams fighting for fourth, fifth place.
Like third, fourth, and fifth. Yeah. Or fourth, fifth, or fourth, and fifth.
Yeah, fourth and fifth, and then who cares about sixth? You're the first loser. But, I mean, Jermaine Jones
so
did you, that.
So then who's the lock for third, then?
I think New York is going to be in third.
Really?
I think they do. I think they do finish in third.
I hope they don't.
I think they do.
And I don't think Pecky's team is that good. I'm sorry. Yes, do they have a great Thierry Henry? Yes, is Bradley Wright Phillips having probably one of the best years ever in his career? Sure. But overall, I don't know if that team is is top three. I don't know.
I think they are in the East.
They got good pieces, but I don't know if they're overall a good team.
They have great pieces. They're a solid team. But I think
why can't they pull it together in the playoffs? Why don't they pull it together against big teams?
I'm not going to say they're going to. I don't think they're going to do anything in the playoffs. But I think they do enough where they finish third in the East and they make it to the playoffs and they'll play. In my calculation, I think TFC.
So I'm calling it now. They finish fifth.
I think they play Toronto.
I'm calling it now. They finish fifth.
I have Toronto in the fifth spot. We can talk about this more later.
Okay. We have Dahl and Cuff on the program today.
State of the Refs.
State of the Refs. We'll see.
Comcast Sports Network.
We'll see what he's got for his conversation with Jermaine Jones tonight.
I look forward to that.
I made a mistake once with Dahlin.
Yeah, what was that?
Because Dahlin's never met me in person. We've had him on this podcast like once before. And I saw him walking through the tunnels of Gillette before the press conference.
Fancy.
Fancy, you know.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting
Big deal. I got my bodyguard next to me. Kyle McCarthy's got three of his bodyguards next to him. And then walking down without a bodyguard, I go, Dahlin!
The only man who needs a bodyguard.
The only man who needs one, really. I need one because they need to escort me around so I'm not popping my head into locker rooms. I go, Dahlin! The voice in a very, very, like, very subtle, seldom... It's Dahlin. Hey, how are you? Damn it! I go, hey, Tom Quinlan, nice to meet you. Oh, hey, how you doing? Oh, you screwed up my name. You're an idiot.
Faux pas.
Like, have you ever done that before? Screwed up somebody's name?
For the longest time, I mixed up Michelle and Melissa, which are totally different names.
Wait a minute. How do you screw up Michelle and Melissa? At least I screwed up the pronunciation of Dahlin.
I don't know. I did it on more than one occasion.
Was it your girlfriend?
No.
Good.
There was a neighbor, and her name, it was either Michelle or Melissa. I don't know, because I screwed it up so many times.
But that has nothing to do with mixing up Dahlin and Dahlin.
No, but that's, I mean, it's even worse.
Well, that is worse. That's.
I called someone by their wrong name.
That's forgetting. That's just negligence.
I'm confused. They both start with M's.
That's negligence.
Yeah, whatever.
So, yeah, I screwed up Dahlin's name. Into his face, and I did not. I was kind of embarrassed.
He's an on-air personality.
He's a TV host, and I'm screwing up his name. I'm a wimpy little podcast guy.
Like the one Rev.
The one shot I had to possibly impress somebody important.
Comcast Sports Network.
Screw it up.
You know they're affiliated with the Sports Hub, right?
I know. He was on Felger and Maz.
Yeah, you just. Digging your own grave, man.
He doesn't look like a soccer guy. Reminds me like more of a basketball guy.
He writes for basketball.
He does write for basketball. Yeah. But I could definitely see him taking like Mike Gorman's job one day.
Wow.
Yeah.
You should tell him that. I'm sure he's going to forget all about you mispronouncing his name. You know, I see you being a future Mike Gorman.
Why not, right?
And Tom Heinsohn will still be there because that guy's never going to die.
No, he never ages either. So, yeah.
Crazier and crazier every year.
The Revs are in a good position after signing Jermaine Jones. Whether or not they win the next four games out of the break here, they're put themselves, I believe, in a position where you can play with stuff. We'll talk with Don about this in the next couple of minutes here. You just have options. And, you know, the depth that was lacking in certain areas, Jermaine Jones masks a lot of those deficiencies in certain areas. Like for the wings example, I don't think you have a set wing that you can really trust and rely on, unless they've really tried to are doing whatever they can to convert Kellen to a full-time winger,
which I don't enjoy at all.
No.
I mean, I think that Jermaine Jones is going to make a lot of the midfield that much better. I think he makes the defenders better. I think that, I mean, this has been said before. This isn't, you know, an original thought. Lee Wynn is going to benefit greatly.
You just don't have to. The best part about Lee Wynn not having to play defense anymore is that him playing so much higher, like his distribution skills and the way he facilitates this year have been absolutely second to none.
Yeah. No, and it's just, it's going to get better. I mean, that I can guarantee you. Like, you can take that one to the bank. Like, Lee Wynn's performance is going to improve tenfold. And he's already been having a great season. Everyone's already calling it. Like, Jermaine Jones coming to the Revs is going to be what brings Lee Wynn to that next level and maybe gets a U.S. call-up. I mean, there's plenty of opportunities over the next couple years.
He's young enough, right?
He's 27. He's in that. I mean, he's not a spring chicken, but
he's a guy that, I mean, you think about just the spark that he brings to a team.
Yeah, no, I think that he'd be a good, solid, you know, Gold Cup player.
The guy's got an 81% pass completion. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that not reliability? And then you throw Jermaine Jones in there. See, the one thing that this team has always benefited from, and I talked to Brad Feldman about this after we did our hit on the radio the other day. This team really works well when they have a good spine. When you have, you know, think about like some of the great Rev teams when you've had Charlie Joseph in his prime, Taylor Twellman in his prime, Steve Rolfe in his prime, Michael Parkhurst. You know, think about how dominant those teams were straight down the middle. I think that's what Jay's trying to replicate here in a sense. Jay wants to bring back the glory days of the middle of the years with the Revolution. In a way, you want to have this team be dominant straight down the middle. So I think the only place that you would like to be a little bit stronger is with Charlie Davies. Some people would say that you could do better than Davies. I think with the relationship that Charlie Davies has with Jermaine Jones, final piece is now added with Jermaine Jones.
Yeah, I mean, Davies is clearly turned out to be a huge factor in...
Which is unreal.
Jermaine, yeah.
Unreal.
Jermaine Jones' happiness is really right now indicative of Charlie Davies being on this team.
Thank you, Charlie!
I mean, I've fallen in love with Charlie Davies over the last 3 weeks. I mean, he has been the best person up top all season, even when Mullins was going through his 4 or 5 game tear.
Well, you could thank Charlie Davies for the win in San Jose.
I can thank Charlie Davies for a lot of things. Yeah, I mean, that
it was the quick restart from Scott Caldwell to Charlie Davies. Davies plays it up to win back to Scotty, I think, or something like that. It was a crazy sequence in which
Charlie Davies actually got fouled, called for a foul, and had the quick start, which is something that doesn't happen anymore for Charlie Davies for whatever reason.
Hey, listen, man. What, him getting fouled?
Yeah, well, no, him getting the call for a foul.
Oh, yeah, no, that doesn't happen. Yeah. You know what? Happy Jermaine Jones is all settled in here. That's all we care about at this point.
Exactly.
He's here. We're overdone with trying to speculate where he's going to go, and now we can learn more about Jermaine Jones. And a guy that's going to teach us more about Jones here tonight on Comcast Sportsnet, 9 o'clock. He's been on State of the Revs all year long. Don Cuff. It's a great show. It's a phenomenal show. And he's a great host, fun host.
Yep.
And he's got to know Jermaine Jones. So what did we learn?
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Obviously appreciate the kind words. We learned he's first and foremost a real nice guy, and he is excited about being here. I think there's a lot of speculation and that he didn't want to come here. And we all had heard that before. We wanted to go to Chivas, wanted to go to Chicago. But in my conversation with him on camera, but also off camera, it seemed like he's genuinely excited about being here. So that's, I think, really important, first and foremost, that he's where he thinks he can succeed, where he thinks he can help a team, and where he thinks his leadership will be critical on and off the field with the young squad. So I think it's obviously an exciting time for all of us, and I think we all hope to see him on the field against Toronto, but if not, understandably so. He's on a two-month break, so but we hope to see him out there.
Where do you think there's more relief right now, Dolan? I mean, I remember you writing an article for Comcast about 2 weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, saying that the Revs need to make this move for Jermaine Jones, and it felt like you were echoing the thoughts of everybody in the city. Everybody was saying, get this guy to New England. Now that he's here, who do you think feels the most relief? The front office, the players, fans, or front ownership? There we go.
I think relief is around the fans. I think we want to believe that our organization and our ownership wants to, is as committed to the team as we are as fans and as a company from a Comcast point perspective as us broadcasting. You want to be part of the team. You want to be met halfway by your ownership. And I think legitimate questions have been asked by the fans for years. Are we going to invest in players? I mean, we're the only roster that has active. No active DPs once we sent Jerry Benson down to Argentina. So when you start to look at things like that, and we obviously the facilities battle and how to get a new stadium is a huge uphill fight, and who knows if and when that'll ever happen. So the only place they can invest and show some commitment is on the field in high-profile players. And this was a big one to get. So I think as a fan perspective, you kind of take some solace in the fact that, okay, the Crafts were in this. They battled. It wasn't easy. Obviously, it was a month-long process. And even on top of that, I know the reported numbers is $4.7 million for a year and a half. That was the bid that they're paying. But if you read other reports and you hear Alexi Lalas when they first started talking about it, but to come to New England, he had to give even a little bit more than that. So they might end up being over $5 million paid out by the Crafts for really about 15 months of work. So I think from a release standpoint, it's us on the fan side that it should be happy. The fans should be supportive that the Crafts and I made this move. And hopefully this is the first ball rolling. Hopefully Jermaine does help them make the playoffs. Hopefully he enjoys his time here. Hopefully the fact that, yes, they still play on turf and play in a football stadium is not too much of a drawback, and it gets back to other high-profile players. Hey, New England is a real destination. You guys might want to think about it. I don't think guys had that in their consideration set. So if he helps break down that barrier, and he's the first of one that comes maybe next year or the year after that, that's important. And I think they need to kind of start small building blocks as you try to build this franchise up to the level of the SKCs or Seattle's, where those teams seem like they're going. We need to get on board and get back and close the gap with them.
So from a Comcast standpoint, how much does this move push the needle?
From our standpoint, I think it's huge just in terms of having somebody that the casual fan can gravitate toward and keeping the Revs involved in a daily conversation. I mean, this stuff happens. We take the press conference the next day live. We're talking about it on Early Edition with Gresh and Dickerson, the newsroom's talking about it, Felger's talking about it with us, the night of, the next day. I mean, he's one of the few guys in the market that has a big voice that's on board, and I think that's important, not just from our perspective, but just from gaining relevancy within the market. You need to have discussion about, is this the guy? Who's the guy? Is he the right guy? Is it the right time? What did the Crafts do? All the questions we ask about every team, you want to ask about the Revs, and I think that this acquisition helps put them, at least for right now, on that same even playing field. And as we get into this playoff race, it's actually kind of the perfect time for people to get engaged, because every game really matters down the stretch. And in any soccer season, every game really does matter. But particularly now, you see how the Eastern Conference is so tight. Every match is critical. And I think the casual fan, if it's just a couple hundred more tune in on Saturday, that's still a step. And if he plays and plays well, maybe there'll be a couple more. And I think the biggest difference you're going to see, hopefully, is that a kid that was six this past summer, that liked the U.S. team, but maybe doesn't watch the Revs very much. But now his dad gets, hey, remember that guy that scored the goal in Portugal? Maybe we should go watch that game. Or maybe we should turn that game on. Now MLS is more of a family sport. It's younger oriented. then you begin to grab onto these younger kids and other young families that now want to watch. And that's a big difference that we maybe not have seen if you didn't come here.
Dolan Cuff with us. And, Dolan, I don't know if you catched Felger and Maz yesterday. They were doing a percentage take on, like, the most popular teams in Boston. The guy went out and surveyed, like, 15,000 people over the course of a year of which team that they would like to follow most. And the Revs, obviously, if you know, the question was, if you had one team to follow for the rest of your life, what would it be? And the Revs fell into the 1% category. So, obviously, we could be known, ironically, as the 1% that follow this organization. But that was for the 25 to 50 demographic. What is it going to take to get that demographic to pump those numbers up and get the Revs to be more relevant in this area? Because it's going to take more now than just the Jermaine Jones move.
Yeah, I mean, this market is a market of winners. Let's just be really frank about it. If you win, they come, you know. And we've seen it with the Bruins. I mean, 7-8 years ago, the Bruins didn't have a monster following, and now the following is, you know, drastically different because they've won, and it's drastically different with the 18 to 34 year old crew because that, you know, that group might be more, you know, likely to glom onto a team, to maybe not have an affiliation, particularly to a hockey team. And they came in a very, we all know how much this population is, all these different college kids that end up staying here. Maybe they jumped into the Bruins because it's younger, it was funner, it was more fun when they were winning and stuff like that. So winning is first and foremost. You got to win. If you win, it helps. When it comes to, you know, I've been saying this, when it gets to like the 40 and 50 year old demographics, I do think the ship is sailed on soccer. If you're not into a club team, it's really hard to convert those people because I think they lose a desire to ask the question, why are we playing? What is the U.S. Open Cup? What is the transfer? All the things that they don't understand, I feel like it bothers them more than a 24 year old being like, I don't understand it, but let's figure out what the deal is and why they do things this way. And I think it's just a demographic difference between kids that are younger, maybe not have really locked into these are my three teams, and I don't, particularly kids that are 25 years old, you don't usually have a wife and kids yet, have more time, you're able to diversify your interests, you're able to spend more time and commit more time to different sports, whereas guys that are 40 and 50 are kind of locked into their ways. So I don't necessarily think that's gonna change with that demographic. It's the younger group that as we win, those, hopefully, as they win, these kids get involved, stay involved, and be committed to the team. And then maybe, yeah, you'll get the 40 and 50-year-olds will tune in for the playoffs, but you need people that are going to be there year-round. I think that's going to really rely on the younger demographics. As the sport grows in the country and as this league grows, it's not even 20 years old. So it's a 10, 20-year proposition down the road, and that's why I think the people in their 20s are the most, you know, key right now.
What about the diverse demographic that we have here in New England? Because I always have said this ever since moving up here. Outside of New York, the most diverse place in the Northeast has to be, you know, the New England region just because of the, you know, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. You have such a, in that small area alone, you have such a diverse population. It amazes me that I feel like there's still an untouched demographic there that the Revs can't seem to translate with the international audience, but those international audience members will go in and still follow La Liga, Bundesliga, EPL, and then shun off MLS. So that's, I think, another problem that I think league-wide MLS has to figure out too, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's a huge problem, and that is a league-wide issue, and I've talked about this with, I think we asked that question, I'm not sure if it ran or not, with State of the Reds, but I've talked about it on camera and off camera with guys like Kyle Martino and Robbie Musto and Arlo White, because I think we've all, anybody that's part of that NBC Sports Network family has seen the success EPL has had, in particular for that league, in this country. And when you look at the U.S. men's national team ratings within the Boston market, they were kind of consistently top five in the country. I mean, people here watch the sport. They like the sport at its highest level, and I think that's the stigma that MLS continues to battle, that this league is on par, or not. I'm not going to say it's on par, because it's not. Or it's not as huge a drop-off from EPL to Liga. Right now it is, but as they continue to close the gap, which they have, almost year over year, the gap continues to be closed, and as more teams come over here and play against MLS teams, they always say it, the league is better than they thought it was, they were more impressed with it than you think, but that's got to translate to the consumer, and I think that is a huge issue within MLS, is how do you convert EPL to Liga fans into being, or just soccer fans, into being MLS fans? It's not easy, and I don't have the solution for you. I don't know how to do it. I think it does require a huge marketing push by every team in their local markets. And I do think it requires commitment and continued commitment by the league to just improve the product. And they've done that, and they've done a huge, great job in getting that new TV deal. I mean, unfortunately, we'll not be on NBC next year, but being on Fox and and ESPN, and they're going to normalize the schedules. I believe it's going to be a Saturday-Sunday doubleheader every week, same-time kickoff. So trying to make it kind of appointment viewing like football, where you know what time the games are, you know what the national games are. You're making, I believe, $720 million over the next 8 years with that deal, so that'll help pump money into the player, into providing money to give more money to players to get them here to up the level of the product. And I think it's just, again, it's a long process, and there are soccer fans. As the soccer fans continue to grow, you just hope that you can get the MLS fans, the kids to be MLS fans, on board early so they're not making that conversion, because that conversion is the hardest part of it.
Dalen, so you were fortunate enough to talk to Jermaine for an interview, which we'll be seeing tonight on State of the Revs on Comcast. What's one interesting tidbit you can give us from that interview?
One interesting tidbit is I think he's going to play. I mean, I think he wants to play.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. You always wonder when a guy is out for 2 months and he hasn't played in a competitive environment where their head's at. You know, some guys believe and think, you know, hey, I gotta work myself back in. I kind of expected to hear that answer, and it wasn't that. I mean, it's, you know, I believe you'll hear it tonight. We're going to do the interview went like 12, 14 minutes, and we're going to do it in two installments. So I think today's installment will be very Revs-focused, and then we talked a bit about the men's national team and some other things. So that probably run in the next episode 2 weeks. But as it relates to what he said about playing, he was very, you know, he said, if I start, maybe I can go as long as I can. I raise my hand. If not, I'll come off the bench. Like, he wants to be in the game. And yeah. I thought you could take the easy way out and be like, hey, I haven't played in a while. I need to kind of ease my way back in. I don't want to push it. But I think he knows the urgency. Only 10 games left. He doesn't want to harm the team, but he feels that he can help them, I think. And I think that was kind of surprising to hear and good to hear that he wants to get out there as soon as possible and wants to strap it up and see if he can get them a win or get them a result at all.
So obviously, following on Instagram, he had a pretty interesting sabbatical, hanging out with Charlie Sheen and Paris Hilton and et cetera, of that kind of lifestyle.
Not too bad.
No, it looks fantastic. I was jealous of him every night. Do you feel like that's going to kind of fall to the wayside now that he's here, or do you think he's still going to try to be kind of in the limelight in the Boston area?
I don't know. I don't think he's going to shy away from it. I think his personality, I think he likes to kind of get out there and have fun, enjoy life, enjoy his family, enjoy life away from the game. And I think he needs actually to be kind of a figurehead for this organization on and off the field. So I don't think they're going to try to, you know, I wouldn't say want him to hang out with Charlie Sheen. That's not exactly the best thing. I think we all saw that. We're like, ooh, that's not.
Who wouldn't want to hang out with Charlie Sheen? Come on.
You want to hang out with him. That's your particular activities are involved, but I think they're all popping into our heads.
That's one of those once-in-a-lifetime experiences you can't miss out on. Come on.
He did mention, he said it was funny that now that he, I think this ran, I'm not sure if this will run or not, but he did say that these people used to watch on TV, now they invited him to parties, so it was pretty cool. So he was enjoying the fact that he was very recognizable and a celebrity in the States, which is obviously a different thing for him and for most soccer players. And a lot of guys, I mean, Messi said it before, he likes coming to the States, and a lot of guys do, because you can be relatively anonymous, you know, up until the last year or two when it's gotten really marketed well here. But 4 years ago, you could walk around, except for Ronaldo, and most people aren't going to know you, you know. So he enjoyed that a little bit, you could tell. But I think, at least our market, he needs to be the face of the franchise on the field, but also off the field. So whether it's appearing in different events, being at different, larger events, that's going to Patriots games, going to Celtics games, going to different social functions, just fundraisers, whatever it is, I'm sure he's going to be utilized as much as possible by the Revs. And also, I think he'll do it on his own, because I think that's the kind of person he is. And I think he wants to be kind of really welcomed into the market and really enjoy his time here for the next year and a half.
How do you feel about, do you feel that this move is going to make the Revs an instant contender in the Eastern Conference?
The thing that's unique about, you know, we all know this about MLS, is you just got to get in the playoffs. Yeah. Like any other, you know, U.S. sport, you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. So I think, I don't think this team, on its man, if they had to play a seven-game series, are they going to beat SKC? Probably not. Are they going to beat D.C. United? Maybe. But that question of that, maybe, and that team right now is leading the Eastern Conference, that's something that isn't typical in most sports in our culture. You know, the last team in usually is the first team out. You know, the eighth seed in hockey, maybe they can pull it off. The eighth seed in basketball almost never happens. So the difference is, and I think he's well aware of this, and I think he's excited about it, we talked a bit about it, is just you just got to get the playoffs. You just got to get to that fifth spot. So I think he can help propel them into that area, because I do think he helps in two massive areas. You know, the fact that they've just given up so many goals, and questionable goals to say the least, will help him defensively. We all know that. But also, I think we're all interested to see how Jay Huse puts together the tactical scheme to allow him to go forward to help create offense as well. And I think he'll be able to provide that kind of box-to-box presence and do some things like he did for the U.S. team as far as helping create, helping keep possession, and get them into the playoffs. And once you're in, anything can happen. I think that's the big piece here. There's no team that's, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else in the Eastern Conference. I mean, we will find out that they're stretched, too. I believe in the last 10 games, they played Kansas City twice, Toronto twice, and Columbus twice. All three of those are right now in the playoffs. You know, they're in the playoffs right now, if you look at it right now. So we'll see where they're at, and they're going to have a tough stretch to get there. But if they get in, I think they can make a run for it.
He's Dolan Cuff of Comcast Sportsnet New England. Dolan, before we let you go, I talked about this with Brad the other night, and I think it's really paid off for this organization that they've stuck to this mindset and thinking. I mean, the one thing that's always stuck out is the quietness and everything that is so close and kept to the chest here. When you look at the polar opposites to the way that things were done in Chicago and New England with this whole Jermaine Jones fiasco, and now that we're through it, obviously New England comes out shining like a golden goose. Is it at the end of the day going to be beneficial for this front office to stick with their ways that they're going about things now and not talking about player movements, not saying who they're interested in, and just doing everything behind closed doors?
You know, Leopard's not going to change the spots, you know, so I don't think they're going to change the way they operate. The difference is when, and this came up a little in the press conference as well, is when you get a guy of Jermaine Jones's profile, no matter how quiet you try to be, it's going to get out. So that's going to happen. So I think it's a matter of, if you want to keep things close to the vest, you know, that's all fine and good. But just like everybody finds out things with the Patriots, everybody's going to find out things with the Reds, too. When it comes to certain people, certain profile, people want to dig. So as we get into more of these, and I hope they are in more of these, you know, battles for some of our best players, whether it be, you know, in our country or elsewhere, that have an interest in coming to the league, you know, those things are going to leak out, and that's fine. And I think they handled it fine. And as long as they just make the hard pitch, I don't care if it's behind closed doors, as long as they make the hard pitch and they're committed monetarily to getting things done, and at least they show that in this instance, that's all I really care about. You don't need to be. Chicago had their stuff front and center, and now you leave with egg on your face. I'd rather you don't need to have that. That doesn't help anybody. This actually infuriates your fan base. I mean, they'd known how the step by step how it was going for the last 6 weeks, and they couldn't get it done. I'd be pretty pissed if I was a Fire fan versus a Reds fan. You find out the last 3 weeks, get your hopes up, but they don't talk about it much. And he doesn't come, okay, you're disappointed, but, you know, you haven't been building up everything to this the last 6 weeks. So however they handle the business, fine, but as long as they're monetarily committed and they're going to go hard at people, that's all we can ask for. And I think, like I said, if it's people of a certain ilk, we're going to get the background story anyway from some source, because it always leaks out.
He's Dolan Cuff. Keep it real, my man. Always great as usual.
All right, thanks a lot, fellas. Have a good one.
Have a good one, man.
Love it.
Yeah, Dolan Cuff.
State of the Rebs tonight, 9 p.m.
Comcast Sports Network.
Don's great.
I feel honored right now. I kind of got like fanboy there for a second. I'm like,
oh. Well, he was he is a national treasure. I didn't bring to you my original national treasure that was supposed to be my surprise, but I did bring you a national treasure today in Dolan Cuff, because he does do stuff for NBC Sports Network and MLS.
Yep. So there we go.
So there you go.
Wow.
I got you covered.
Yep.
You talked to a national treasure today.
I did.
Dolan Cuff is a national treasure, and we had him on this podcast. Hello? Hello. How are you? Jermaine Jones is a Rev. They take on Toronto. When? We'll tell you right now. 5 o'clock. Where? Well, guess where?
BMO Field.
Against who?
Toronto FC.
So there you go.
Pretty unoriginal name.
Yeah, pretty unoriginal. But hey, it's it is the Reds, and it's the Rebs. And it is going to be the push for the playoffs, in which we'll see hopefully a full Jermaine Jones out there on Saturday night.
I think it's more realistic at this point to look at him as a late sub. And I am going to be excited. I will be at the Banshee.
That's fine.
And I will cheer my buns off.
I want to do shows from the Banshee soon.
Let's do it.
Let's do shows from the Banshee.
Let's do it.
We need to get in touch with them.
Let's do it on Derby Days.
Let's do it on Derby Days.
Derby Days. I like it. Derby Days.
I would like to do some. I want to start doing post game shows from there and New England Soccer Weekly.
Yeah, Derby days wouldn't. I mean, unless I'm going to be invited on doing the Soccer Weekly, that really wouldn't work for me because Saturdays would be when they are.
Well, I mean, if we're at the Banshee though, and if it's like, if the Revs got an away game, right? See, this weekend would be a nice weekend to do something from the Banshee because the Revs got a 5 o'clock game. You do something from 12 to 1 at the Banshee on New England Soccer Weekly. And then from 1 to 5, we hang out, have a great time. From 1 to 7, really, we hang out, drink, be merry, and have a great time. And then from 7 to 9, I go back on the radio, try to be sober. And then we do the post-game show from 7 to 8.
I like it. Let's do it.
Banshee. Let's do it. Let's make this happen. I think they could beat Toronto. Listen, plenty of pretenders and contenders right now left in this season. There's a lot of pretenders in the Eastern Conference. I think Columbus could be a pretender. Let's go through it, all right? You know what? I got a list right here. Okay. Let's go through teams we think are in, out, pretenders, contenders, what have you. It is time for the playoffs, snitches. All right. Toronto FC. Contender or pretender? Do we get them in or do we watch them wither away?
I think it's going to be close. I have them finishing fifth.
Okay.
But Philadelphia, like, so it's just, there's so many teams that are upward trending. I feel like Toronto right now, obviously, they're sitting comfortable in third.
Sure.
That's not where they're going to finish. They're not a third place team. I think they're going to drop. Like I said, I have them in fifth. But it's a real, real close battle between Toronto, Philly, and Columbus for that fifth spot.
I think Toronto is a contender. I think they're in the playoffs. Columbus, for me, pretender.
They're a pretender.
They're a pretender. They got 35 goals against. Excuse me. They got 32 goals against, which is the second worst amongst any of the top five teams within the Eastern Conference. They don't play well on the road. I don't see Columbus being a really big, hard leap for New England. I think the New England could get over Columbus. I really do think they could have won that that 2-1 loss that they had to Columbus early in the year. That could have been a 1-1 draw or a 1-0 win if not for some silly mistakes in that game.
I think what's important with Columbus is they're a team that's pretty solid, but they're just missing a piece or two, and they just got rid of Giancarlo. I forget his last name right now. He's going to Serie A.
Yes, I just saw that yesterday.
For $5 million, which is pretty impressive. More than Yedlin to Tottenham, actually. But they have a really, you know, they have
Giancarlo Gonzalez.
Yeah, so they have Frederico Higuain, they have Michael Parkhurst, and they have a bunch of Jags. Nothing special. They're a contender, pretender, 100%.
New York, contender. They're in the playoffs. We're putting them in there. So pretty much we're trying to figure out who, if among New England, Philadelphia, Chicago, and Houston's that last team. It's New England. Jermaine Jones just put New England in the playoffs. There you go. Philadelphia, I don't see staying consistent. Jim Curtin has done a great job pulling that team up. Sebastian Letou is probably the comeback player of the year. But Philadelphia is probably not the team to do it. Harrison Shipp, rookie of the year. Mike McGee didn't have the same MVP-type year, but I think you can blame it on the defense, and maybe I think Sean Johnson's a little overrated.
I think they're going to make it interesting, though. I mean, that's what I look forward to, especially with Philly and Chicago. I think they're gonna kind of play spoiler for a lot of teams. I mean, both teams have a lot of fight in them, and you know the Revs, all their next 10 games, said this again, cannot be understated, all in the Eastern Conference. Huge.
And then Houston, I don't think's in it.
No, Houston's not in it, and that's weird.
So right now we've got DC in, Sporting in, New York in, Toronto in, Revs in.
Yep.
Okay. Western Conference: Seattle and LA locks. Yes. No. Yep, maybe.
Absolutely.
Okay. Are we just trying to determine fifth place at this point? That's pretty much what we're trying to determine.
Yeah, everything else is a lock. I mean, Seattle makes it. Real LA. Salt Lake makes it. LA makes it. Dallas makes it. But who's the fit? Is it Portland? Is it Vancouver? Colorado's really not out of it, but they technically are because they have a lot of injuries.
Right. I'm going with Vancouver because they got a game in hand right now. They got one game in hand with Portland. I don't see Portland. I don't know, man. I did, you know, Portland, when they came here, they could have easily dropped all 3 points versus New England. And I just don't see them being able to hang on. They just don't seem like they have enough.
See, the thing is why I think Portland has a chance is, like you said, they easily could have dropped all 3 points. They don't really do that a lot. They draw more than anything. I think that that's going to be advantageous to them long haul. But also, Vancouver just got Mara Rosales, and that really changes the whole thing for me with Vancouver. They have Rosales there, obviously. He adds a lot of spark to that midfield. They already have a pretty solid striking core up there.
Sure.
Their biggest issue is their defense. You know, like, what are they going to do? So I think Portland makes it over Vancouver. I do.
I don't know. I'm going to go with Vancouver on that one. But, you know, we will stay disagreed. Disagreed?
Agreed.
We will agree to disagree. Okay? I'm going to learn how to speak today. What? Fine. Here we go. Now, transitioning. MLS, done for now. We're going to come back to it in a minute. So pretty much, I've got Vancouver and you got Portland in, and the rest of us, the top four teams right now, Seattle, LA, FC Dallas, Real Salt Lake, they're all in, and we'll figure them out later.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. More soccer stuff, wrapping up the show, because we're going to do that, but I want to finish with MLS. Jump over to the most important league in the world.
The Bundesliga.
Stop it. The Barclays Premier League. Oh.
It's back for another weekend. Guess what? Manchester United is going to still be winless.
What bag of dog crap are they playing this week?
Burnley.
I was right.
Cool. There you go. Burnley and Manchester United from Burnley. 7:45, NBC Sports Network.
I'll be sleeping through that one.
So will I.
I don't blame you.
That's why I'm talking this low.
Okay.
What do you got?
In that game, are you serious? Is that a serious? I mean,
who do you got?
Burnley 2-0.
I'm saving it. No, Manchester City and Stoke. You don't get a rebuttal. You just put it. Burnley 2-0 over Man United. I don't even want to hear anything else.
Well, that probably is likely to happen, considering how that bag of crap's been playing. And
thank you, MK Dons. Thank you, MK Dons. 4-0 in Capital One.
In fake Manchester.
In real Manchester, City takes on Stoke 10 o'clock on NBC Sports Network. Manuel Pellegrini's boys look absolutely dominant. You're welcome.
Jeff Cameron's injured.
Yes, he is. Doesn't know what's going to... He's got about three more days until he figures out what's going on. Actually, NBC Sports Network is going to be live at 6 o'clock for transfer window closing.
I did see that.
Amazing.
That'll be huge.
Newcastle and Crystal Palace. That is 10 o'clock on NBC Sports Extra Time. Newcastle's at home. Crystal Palace has hired a new manager. It's an old manager. Pull up the guys. I just had... hate the internet in this place. Neil
Sedaka.
Neil Warnock, the new gaffer over with Crystal Palace. So there you go. QPR on Sunderland. Sunderland had a 2-0 win yesterday, and Jose Altidore started. So there you go. And that's over at Loftus Road. Swansea hosting West Bromwich Albion. That's in Wales. It's 10 o'clock as well. West Ham.
That could be a really interesting game because Swansea still 2-0. They could go 3-0.
They could go 3-0. West Bromwich Albion.
Ridiculous. Swansea every year.
Starts off hot, man. Everton and Chelsea from Goodison Park.
Should be a good one so far. That's the game of the week.
Yeah, that's the game of the week so far. On NBC, too. So another game where Tim Howard's on national TV. I think he worked out a contract with NBC that he's on national TV the day before he goes on NBC Sports Network. Or 2 days before he's got to be on NBC Sports Network. He has to be playing on a national televised game. Because he did it last week against Arsenal.
It's just his team is playing other good teams.
I know. Destroy my momentum here.
It's a terrible conspiracy theory.
Shut up. 8:30 in the morning. Sunday, August 31st. Deadline day. Villa, Hull City. You got it? Good.
Come on, you villains.
Tottenham, Liverpool, White Hart Lane, 8:30 as well. NBC Sports Network. That's an Arlo White special. Come on, you Reds. That's going to be hopefully Balotelli's debut day. And then the 11 o'clock game, Leicester versus Arsenal.
Sorry, Leicester.
Yep. And then we go on our little international break. So that is done with the Barclays Premier League stuff for
3 weeks. Just drop the mic. Done.
Okay. I don't know. MLS. Kansas City goes down to Houston tomorrow night on NBC Sports Network, 8 o'clock. There you go. That's the first game of the day. I think if you're a Revs fan, still love to see Kansas City win that game. Just beat up on the other Eastern Conference teams that are not you.
Houston is a tough place to play.
As the Revs.
Yeah. I mean, ask anybody. I mean, they went, like a year and a half without losing there? I think that any time you go to Houston, you really can't expect too much.
Seattle goes to Colorado. That's a 4 o'clock game on Saturday. So we'll see what happens. Toronto, New England. Excuse me. Kansas City hosts Houston. I'm reading this the wrong way.
That's totally different then.
Yeah. So Kansas City hosts Houston at Blue Hell. You know what it is? I'm so used to American sports putting the home team on the bottom of the graphic, opposed to putting it on the top where they do it in Europe. So let's revisit. No. Kansas City hosts Houston. Seattle hosts Colorado. 4 o'clock on Saturday. Kansas City hosts Houston, 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Toronto hosts New England, 5 o'clock on Saturday. Montreal hosts Columbus on 7:30 Saturday. Chicago and Dallas, 8:30 Saturday. And then Vancouver and Portland, 10:30, Cascadia Cup.
There we go. That'll be the game. That's the game right there.
If Vancouver wins that, I want a Oreo Culotta Tuesday.
Okay. And when Portland wins, I want an Oreo Culotta because I'm uncreative and I don't know what I really want.
Fine. San Jose hosts Real Salt Lake, 10:30 also. And then Sunday games, deadline day games. D.C. hosts New York. Come on. I don't even know who to root for in that game. And then Chivas USA in L.A. The battle for California.
Well, by your breakdown of wanting Houston to lose, you want D.C. to win because the Reds aren't catching D.C. anytime soon.
Yeah, I know. And that just amazes me that D.C.'s done what they've done.
Worst first.
Don Orsell is going to claim that copyright. Worst to first.
But with him, it's worst to first, then worst again.
Yeah. So. All right, we got some Biggie on this Throwback Thursday. I love it.
It's Craig Mack.
But Biggie was in this song.
But this is a Craig Mack song.
Oh, my God, I'm screwing up my bad boys.
Dude, you can't out-hip-hop me. This is even New York hip-hop, and I'm still out-hip-hopping you. Don't even make me bring Benzino into this conversation.
I'm so disappointed. All right, Brian Speaks, at Brian_Speaks is where you can follow him. Yep. Find him in the stands on Saturday.
Yep.
No, we're not going to see you in the stands on Saturday. Find him on the stands on Wednesday.
No, find me.
But we'll find you. We'll have you here before then.
Find me at the Banshee on Saturday. I was almost going to Toronto.
You know what? It wouldn't have been a bad trip.
I had everything planned out, and then I'm like, you know what? Shit's too expensive. And there I said it.
You said it! Well, there's no point in you going any further now.
I went so long without saying. I went like 3 pods in a row. F word. Hope Team Ops didn't hear that.
Yeah. I'm not even going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I'm not either.
All right. That's another edition of the pod. Goodbye.
Later.